Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Well, that was not the game we were hoping for.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jake.
Oh, you don't?
Oh.
Okay, well.
Oh, the Seahawk game.
Yes.
You were talking about the Kraken last night.
No, that was actually enjoyable to watch. But that Monday night game, wow.
Woof.
Wow, I could not believe what we were witnessing last night when it comes to the Seattle Seahawks. They lose their game on Monday Night Football, 17-15, late game heroics, possibly coming back.
Now, you said you couldn't believe what was happening last night, but after the season they have had, I can kind of believe it.
Can you?
I can kind of believe that the performance we saw last night against Washington is what the 2021 Seahawks team is.
I mean, quite honestly, I still am in shock that they are 3-8. And to be even more honest, I was numb. At some point at the game, as I was watching the game in the second half, just numb, just couldn't believe what I was watching, and seeing this group struggle as much as they did on third down, watching Russell Wilson miss throws that he doesn't miss, and not missing it in the way that we witnessed last night, it was shocking to see. It was jarring to see. It was also jarring to see an offensive line that just could not pass protect, that could not run block to save their lives. I mean, it was jarring to see this offense just look so totally lost, inept. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Is there another word you could find there?
There's plenty. Text your favorite descriptor of what the Seahawks offense was last night to the Mac and Jack's text line 206-421-3776. But Jake, in our prep for today's show, I think you put it so perfect in where this team is right now, and they're broken. And there is hardly any hope for the playoffs for this team. I believe their chances are down to, what, 1%? And look, Lloyd and Harry, you guys can sit down. I don't think we're saying there's a chance right now. I don't think we're saying that.
No, we're definitely telling me there's a chance. There's none of that. No, I'm not telling you there's a chance.
This is the first time in a long time that the Seahawks have not had something to play for at any point in the season. Because as we talked about a little bit yesterday, if the Seahawks do get eliminated before the end of week 18 here, which I would imagine is going to happen based off of how the first 11 games of the season has gone, I think after 11 games, you can get a really good read on what a team is like. And a 3-8 start does not paint a good picture.
I don't know. Maybe they could turn it around. I just got a real good feeling about the final six games of the season.
I applaud you for thinking that way, Jake, even though I know
I know.
It was so brutal watching this game last night and knowing that it is still so close. This team, if things could break their way this season, they would probably be in the playoff hunt. All these games that they're losing are close games.
Okay, so get this. They are close games. They're 3-8. There's only two teams in the NFC right now, just to paint this picture. There are only two teams in the NFC that are legitimately out of the playoffs. It is the Seattle Seahawks and it's the Detroit Lions. Outside of that,
Beg pardon, the 0-12-1 Detroit Lions?
Yes, outside of that, everybody else is still in playoff contention. Everybody else in the NFC still has a chance. So when you talk about where the Seahawks are at, that's where they're at. And that's why it's so shocking to me when you have a group that is as talented as this group is and coming in with the expectations that they had, to watch this season just completely crumble and fall away and watch a game like last night where you see this team and just really, as you'd mentioned, it just is the perfect illustration that everything for the Seahawks is broken. The only thing that's not broken that I'll give them credit for that is very deserving is the fact, Curtis, that they played their tails off from start to finish. And you could say whatever you want about the team, about the defense, about the offense. They were still competing all the way to the end where they legitimately had a chance to win, to tie it up, and make a game out of it, send it into overtime.
Absolutely. You were down 17-9. You get that late touchdown to make it 17-15 have a chance to tie the game, send it to overtime.
Right.
And you miss the two-point conversion. And then it's like, oh, well, there's no point in you know, getting up for the final 15 seconds of the game. But then they recover the onside kick, but there's a penalty on
right.
the play.
It perfectly encapsulates what this season has been for them. And you could give them credit for that, and I do. That's the one thing that you can give them credit for. They're fighting. I think leadership is strong from that perspective. You know, focusing on the right things during the week, focusing on the right things practice-wise, you know, focused on trying to play hard and give everything you have. Like, that is something that is real, that is tangible. And I know it sounds like a moral victory, but in the NFL, most teams that are 3-8, they don't play like that. They don't finish like that. So that's one thing. Everything else, though, everything is broken. I mean, I'm serious. It just... You talk about talent acquisition. You talk about coaching philosophy. You talk about your star quarterback in Russell Wilson. You talk about your offensive line. You talk about your run game. I mean, everything about it is broken. And the hard part is they are in such a tailspin that I don't know how they get themselves out of it.
Yeah.
And you know, you could point to Russell Wilson going into that final drive. He was 50%. 50% completion before that last drive. You could point to the fact that they had they had five straight three and outs, and then, oh, the very next possession was a four and out. So, you know, hey, that's so much better. But you look at Russell Wilson, and, you know, three of those third downs, if he hits the open receiver, which he had intention to throw to, and just simply hits him like we know he can, he's fully capable of doing so. I mean, you extend drives, you move the chains, and who knows if that story's different. Alex Collins, if he doesn't fumble that football, what does that drive end up looking like? There's just opportunities and chances that you miss out on that you're being given, and you're not doing anything with it.
Not a single thing. And, I mean, we talk about this team wanting to run the ball so much. Pete Carroll specifically talks about his team wanting to run the ball so much. How many rushing yards did they have as a team last night? 18?
18 rushing yards.
On 10 carries?
18 rushing yards, 10 carries, 2.8 yards a carry. And you know the thing that I have a hard time with Pete Carroll saying that is that he's not addressing the real heart of the problem. When he says, you know, earlier today on with Mike Salk that, hey, we'd like to have more rushing attempts, more attacks at it. Look at Washington, 43 carries, 152 yards. They only had 3.5 yards per carry. Yeah, but they actually have a running game. They actually have a starting running back. They actually have an offensive line that can grind it out and can do something with it. The Seattle Seahawks, even if they had 30 carries in this game, they were just given 30 carries in this game, I still believe that is the result that you're going to get, because offensive line, they were awful.
Well, and even if you had a healthy Chris Carson, it would probably still be the same result, maybe a little bit better.
But you don't. You got Alex Collins, you got DJ Dallas.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Curtis. I know you had your bold take Monday yesterday with DJ going for over 100.
Did I mean to say in one game or over the course of the rest of the season? Because I think that's what I was actually trying to get.
Gotcha. I think even that might be a stretch. I mean, you just look at that. You just look at that aspect of it too. I mean, all of it. I mean, it's so hard. It's so hard. It's so hard to watch. And I know that Damian Lewis wasn't out there, and I know that you had Kyle Fuller out there at your left guard. But that's the lineup that you chose, and that is the depth that you have. And so it just screams and points to all of the issues that you have within this organization, within this franchise right now. There is not one thing, personally, that I view that is held above everything else. I know Stacy would sit here and look at me like I'm crazy when it comes to drafting, when it comes to player acquisition, because that is her number one reason why the team is in the position that they're in, and I totally get that. But there are so many issues right now. It is hard to point to one, and that is why I think this is so tough. When you look at this team at 3-8 right now and the way that this thing's going to finish, I mean, Curtis, I mean, do you think that all three power brokers in this franchise right now, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, John Schneider, you think those three are coming back again next year?
If this is the result that you get from those three coming back, I don't see how that happens. And which pains me to say, because this is the greatest era of Seahawks football we've ever seen. And when these three have been on the same page, we have seen the Seahawks reach heights that no other team in this town, you know, in the four major American sports has ever reached before. Obviously, the Sounders and the Storm have been there. They routinely are contenders. But we're talking football, baseball, basketball, and hockey, which, you know, we're just a few months into the hockey fandom here in Seattle. But look, where those three currently are right now, I have a really hard time seeing one of those three come back, two of those three come back. I mean, maybe one comes back next year, maybe two comes back. I don't know if there's a way that all three can continue to coexist and continue to paint this picture as though things are harmonious between them. When looking at the on-field product, it's pretty obvious that there is not harmony.
Yeah, I mean, outside of the superficial stuff of like, hey, you know, Russell Wilson, you got to hit the open guy when it's in front of you, and he knows that. He's very aware of that. I mean, let's go to cut number four. You know, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll talking about how Russ told the guys, here's what he had to say in the locker room after the game.
He told him, he said, I got to do better. And guys know, they don't have to say a lot. It's not a lot of words. It's just the sincerity and the care, you know, that he brought to it. It was, you know, it was heartfelt. And he's doing everything you can do. He's doing everything you can do. He's staying up late. He's getting up early. He's practicing hard. He's staying after practice. He's getting the reps, the whole thing. He's doing everything he can do. And that's, everybody should understand that. That's really clear.
So, I mean, he understands that. He wears it. He knows that his performance last night was not up to standard, was not a winning performance, and didn't give his guys the best chance to win in that game yesterday. And, you know, so you look at that, and I think that that's what's really hard and really frustrating for a player like that that works as hard as he does and not see the results, and for everybody else in that building that's working hard and feel like, you know, practice-wise, you know, they're doing good things during the week, they've got the right plan, and then they don't execute on game day. I mean, it's all those things that, again, you look at it, and I've been a part of some of those teams. Unfortunately, I've been a part of some losing teams during my days in college football, and you feel good, you feel great during the week, you get out there on the field, and it just never comes together the way that you want it to, the way that you're expecting it to, and you try to find answers and solutions, and they're tough, they're hard to come by. And right now, I think for this group, for the first time ever, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, they're in that world right now. And I think Russell Wilson, you know, described it perfectly. They're in the midst of a storm right now. How do they get themselves out of it? And right now, they've got six games left. Honestly, I don't think that they really mean much other than, you know, can you end on somewhat of a positive
note?
Well,
yeah, you don't even have a draft pick to play for.
Right.
You don't even have a top pick at your disposal in this year's draft. You're playing the rest of this season out to make sure that that draft pick you gave up to the New York Jets doesn't land in the top five, doesn't land in the top three. Because if it does, and we look at this team and how much they have swung and missed in the draft this season, or not just this season, I should say, in the decade since Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman, all those guys were drafted, you cannot look at your draft pick and have it be in the top five and be like, oh, man.
At least you got some hope.
Yeah, at least you got some hope of adding a blue-chip talent, but that's not there this year. That's not going to be there this year. Next year you do have after the 2022 season, you have a first-round pick again. But look, your season right now is this close to being lost. And if they can somehow find a way to rattle off four or five wins here in the final six games of the season, I think that might have people feeling a little bit better heading into next season. But they talked all week about going 7-0 the rest of the season.
Right.
They can't even go 1-0 right now.
Yeah, you're 100% right on that. And that is something that is going to – that stark reality is hitting them hard in the face. It hit them hard in the face last night, I'm sure, on that long plane ride home. It's hitting them hard in the face today as they look at this season, as they look at what's in front of them, and how does Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and the rest of this group try to make the most out of this season? And then really, what is at the end of it? What's waiting for us at the end? And how does this team bounce back and recover from this? Can they recover from this moving forward? So I think that when you're looking at it, it is, as I said before, it's hard to look at the Seattle Seahawks and watch what we watched yesterday and not say they are just flat out broken. All right. Enough of that. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to headline rewrites brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Yesterday, the Mariners signed reigning AL Cy Young winner Robbie Ray to a five-year deal with an opt-out after year three. What is the real headline?
In a corresponding move, the Mariners equipment staff has placed several orders for pants two sizes too small. Robbie Ray loving himself some tight pants.
Oh.
But hey, if that's what it takes to win a Cy Young Award, I'd go right ahead. Wear your pants that small.
Exactly. I will have zero issues, zero problems with it. You know, Curtis, he feels good in that. So if he feels good, looks good, he'll play good, strike guys out, and it does pay good. And he definitely was able to cash in that check. It is still crazy to me. I still cannot believe that Robbie Ray is a part of this starting rotation, that you have the reigning AL Cy Young winner here as a Seattle Mariner coming up next year.
He's leading your rotation.
That's crazy.
Now, the excitement we had over him signing yesterday obviously was incredible. Just think that there could still be more opportunities for us to have those kinds of reactions throughout this offseason.
Oh, no doubt.
There's still names to be had. There's still trades that could potentially be made. I hope it doesn't end with Robbie Ray and Adam Frazier. I mean, those two guys do make your team better than where you were maybe in game 162 last year. But like we talked about yesterday, the Mariners need to find a bat to replace the production of Kyle Seager. Your lineup is not lengthened by adding Adam Frazier.
Right.
By finding somebody that can replace what Kyle Seager does, that gets you back to where you were finishing the season, and then maybe another bat on top of that to then lengthen.
Well, hold on. Okay, so this is semantics, but it is lengthened by adding Adam Frazier. It's just not adding that impact bat that you need. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Adam Frazier is a on-base type of player. He's a hitter. He's not a power bat. He's not an RBI guy, but he's going to get on base, and that's something that's infinitely better than what you had rolling out in that lineup most of the year last year. So that's an improvement.
You don't like Shed Long?
Nah. I mean, hey, I love the guy. Great accessories.
Nice guy.
Oh, amazing grand slam against Tampa. Dylan Moore, I love you. There's no doubt about that. I still wish he could find a role on this team because I love the talent. But, I mean, he gets on base. So now what do you have to round this out with? You have to round it out with impact bats and guys that can really get it done. And you're 100% right, Curtis. The Mariners cannot be done. In my personal opinion, they need three more big moves.
We'll have Ryan Divish coming up at noon today to continue this Mariners conversation.
Oh, yes. Cannot wait for that.
Headline Rewrites.
Kalen DeBoer has officially been announced as the next head coach of UW's football program. What is the real headline?
If it's anything like the last guy that UW hired from the Mountain West, might be someone worth paying attention to.
He might. And that's the thing with Kalen DeBoer. It is not the flashy hire that you would have liked to have seen. I mean, it just as simple as that. But that does not mean that Kalen DeBoer is not a good hire. And quite frankly, I think the Washington Huskies are instantly better than what they are yesterday before they hired Kalen DeBoer. I mean, that's how bad the coaching was here with Jimmy Lake and the rest of the group there. Kalen DeBoer instantly makes this program better. How much better remains to be seen. But I think offensively they will be significantly better, and it's going to be about what DeBoer surrounds himself with, like every other staff. That part of it's going to be really important. What is Kalen DeBoer's message going to be to all the recruits that he talks to on the recruiting trail? What is Washington going to be all about? I am very intrigued and excited to learn what that looks like under Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah, I'm probably not, you know, rattling the bush here much by saying that UW's offense next year will be light years better than what it was this season. And it doesn't even need to improve a ton to be light years better than what it was.
No, it doesn't. But, I mean, that's the part in this that I have full trust that part of it will be better. Now, What do you build off of? Who are you? What is this program going to be all about with Kalen DeBoer? And that part of it is going to be really important as you talk about the messaging of the brand, of the program, as you hit the recruiting trail, knowing that you're going up against Mario Cristobal, and you're going up against Lincoln Riley, and you're going up against Jake Dickard in your own state. Like, all those things are important outside of the X's and O's.
Headline Rewrites.
More in the college football coaching carousel. Brian Kelly is leaving Notre Dame to become the next head coach at LSU. What is the real headline?
Anytime you can ditch your team that has a realistic shot of making the college football playoff, you got to do it. You absolutely have to do it.
This is so dirty.
It's bizarre is what it is. You're on the verge of playing for a national championship, and you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
We go take over this program right here.
Right. I mean, but it's the same thing. I mean, Lincoln Riley, they didn't have a chance to college football playoff, so it's a little bit different, right? This is a little more extreme with Brian Kelly leaving and leaving Notre Dame high and dry in that aspect. But, I mean, LSU, USC, pulling out all the stops to try and pull these guys away from prominent programs. I mean, we're not just talking about any old program. Blue-blooded programs that you can recruit and win and make a ton of money at and have everything that you want, yet these two schools were able to really give the Godfather offer to both Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly. And I honestly actually really like the fit. Brian Kelly at LSU, him in the SEC.
He can recruit, for sure.
He can recruit. It's going to be interesting.
I think programs like Washington and Washington State have to be just exhaling so much today, knowing that they don't have to conduct their coaching searches with now Notre Dame added to the fray, when you've got Florida and you've had LSU and USC and Virginia Tech and all these great programs. I mean, Virginia Tech not necessarily on the level of those programs, but like now you've got to compete against Notre Dame and who they're hiring. If you're about to fire your head coach right now, no matter where you are in the country, like, you are going to have probably pick number two behind what Notre Dame gets. I would imagine guys like Matt Campbell,
yeah,
probably, you know, going to get at least an interview from Notre Dame.
Oh,
which I can kind of see
without
why
question.
I can kind of see why Campbell did not come to Washington, because I think he knows that he can actually reach a little further than where UW is.
Right, and I think that that's what he was kind of holding out for. Maybe one of those, you know, the bigger programs in the Big Ten, Notre Dame. It's really where he's from, so that makes a lot of sense. And the other name to keep an eye out for, which I think the guy who's going to ultimately get the job is going to be Luke Fickell from Cincinnati. He's been doing an amazing job there. I think that that is just too easy of a transition. So Matt Campbell or Luke Fickell would be my one and two for that job for Notre Dame. All right, don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. We had Ryan Roland-Smith on. We had Shannon Dreyer breaking down and talking about Robbie Ray and reacting to the news and giving us all the details and insight. If you missed it, go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, download. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. We thank you so much. All right, coming up next, we've got the legendary Graz giving us his take on what we witnessed last night.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, we are bringing on the Graz on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline to help us sort through all of the emotions that are going on in Seattle sports right now. Graz, how you doing right now?
Jake, I'm an emotional basket case like everyone else.
Well, I'm glad to know that I am not the only one, Graz. If you say that, that makes me feel a lot better about how I'm feeling right now, because there is a wave of emotions. There's some highs and lows going on right now, and let's get to the lows first, Graz. Mm-hmm. The Seahawks game last night, what was your overall take? What was your overall reaction to what you were witnessing?
Incredibly frustrating and disappointing. It looked as though maybe things were going the right way in the first half, a couple of good possessions, but it kind of started towards the end of that second quarter, and all of a sudden you saw that the offense couldn't do anything but go three and out. It was it was mystifying. They weren't getting the ball anywhere near DK Metcalf. How he's not getting targets in this offense is beyond me. And by the time they rallied, which was an incredible last drive, kind of showing what they've been able to do in the past, you know, they're unable to finish it, unable to get the two-point conversion. But, you know, shouldn't have been in that game in the first place. If Washington had a kicker, the game would have been over anyhow. So, you know, they were able to take advantage sort of their last opportunity, but not fully. And you know, Russell Wilson just really, really struggled there, I thought, in the second half. It just does not look like the same guy to me.
Graz, it will probably be the question of the offseason, and here in Seattle, it appears as though the offseason is going to get going a little quicker than we're used to over the last mm-hmm. decade or so. But do you think Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and Russell Wilson have reached the end of their rope, or is this still a partnership that can last beyond this season?
Well, it's a good question, Curtis, because up until this year, it has been a terrific partnership. You have to go back no further than last year when they won 12 games. But, you know, a lot of things you've got to look at this year had to go wrong for all this to happen. There were judgments that were made in the coaching staff that you have to question. There were judgments that then, you know, were made with the talent that they brought in that have to be questioned. And sure, that ultimate relationship between those two, you got to wonder about it. And then if you're in a situation with some veteran, you know, some of your better players are older, like Bobby Wagner, and you're going to be in a rebuild, do you want to go into a rebuild with a guy who's going to be 71 next year? So I think there's a lot of questions to be answered that, you know, you still have the rest of the season to play, which can give you some insight, even though I think it's too late to go into the playoffs. But it will be the most impactful, interesting offseason the Seahawks have had in a decade.
Yeah, there's no question about that, Graz. And really, you look at this offseason, and not just the decade, but how it's going to affect the future of this franchise. And you know, Graz, for so long in this town, everybody's, you know, focused on the success since Mike Holmgren showed up. And I think there's a large contingency of fans that sit here and look at the situation and worry about what the future is like, and hopefully not regressing to, you know, the days of the 70s and 80s and early 90s, were before you really started to have that crazy run of success that we've enjoyed here for over the last, you know, two decades, Graz.
Yeah, it was all through the 90s, Jake. It was a long, long stretch. And you know, one of the things is, it's one of the positions you take for granted, but what made it better in Seattle? Well, I got two names for you, Matt Hasselbeck and Russell Wilson. You had fine quarterbacking, and that turned the franchise around. Literally turned it around to a two-decade run of excellence. But before that, it was a long, cold winter. And boy, when you don't have your franchise quarterback, as you can look at teams around the league, you can look time after time after time after time for him. So, you know, you want Russell Wilson to be what he was and be that again. I mean, that becomes the absolute job one going forward is if you want to stay good, you know, you gotta hang on to your quarterback. And look, there's you definitely got to react to this year. There's no question about that. But you do kind of want to wait till the year is done before you do it and see what they can do with the remaining games. Not that I think they're going to make the playoffs, but if they're still playing hard and you can see that things have gotten figured out in the later half of the season, you might have a different opinion than you have right now.
Graz, yesterday the big news in Mariners world was the signing of Robbie Ray, 5 years, $115 million with an opt-out after year three. Very positive reviews from just about everybody on the signing. I imagine you're also in that camp. What did you make of the Robbie Ray signing?
Love it. You're absolutely right, Curtis. And you know, I like the length of it. I think, you know, without knowing the specifics of it like everyone else, the likelihood is the opt-out after 3 years would probably be something that he would exercise unless things are going particularly well. And let's have things go particularly well and have him opt in. But you know, it's not a 7 or 8 year contract for a guy who is a proven commodity, you know, the Cy Young Award winner this year. We had a great year 2 years ago. You know, eight up innings is the perfect top of the rotation guy. He would have been number one on my list. I do want to see other position players come, but I thought the first thing you needed was a stud pitcher who can eat innings, and you got a little bit more than that with Robbie Ray. So yes, put me in the group that it's there. Very happy to see him coming to town.
Now, Graz, one of the other things about Robbie Ray coming here is that you're hoping that this is not going to be the only move, right, only big move that they make. They now Adam Frazier, Robbie Ray, Graz. What else do they need to add, in your opinion?
Well, I think they're probably, you know, probably still looking at an infielder, I would think, and I imagine the names that are still coming up are Chris Bryant and Story in Colorado, who would be terrific additions and would be big time, big money additions. That there are other free agents out there that they could be looking at as well beyond those guys, but I would think that those guys would be the kind of guys they're looking for. That they seem to be set. When you look at this roster with what they've got in the outfield and what's coming up in the outfield, you're set behind the plate. You're good at first base. You're looking at a little more depth in your infield. So I think an infielder is what you're looking at, and we'll see if it's one of those big names, and we'll see if it's because of this deadline. It may put a pause to things for a while and make it more of a free-for-all when they come to an agreement on a collective bargaining agreement. We'll see. But that's what I think they'd be looking at. I think you're still looking for an infielder.
Graz, always great stuff. Thank you for joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. We always appreciate the time.
Thanks, Jake. Talk to you next week.
All right.
See you, Graz.
See you, Graz. Coming up in today's show, we are going to announce a Seahawks code word for your chance to win two tickets to see the Seahawks host the 49ers this Sunday. Find tickets for this matchup and the Seahawks special offer for a holiday ticket pack at Seahawks.com/tickets.
What do you think the code word could be?
Ooh, I don't know. The names that I'm thinking of are probably not good. So maybe we should go there. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. All right, Curtis and I are going to make a pitch, a statement, if you will, for the Mariners, a last plea, if you will, as they're coming up on this deadline here. At the end of the day, that's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's right, DJ. This music is very appropriate because right now, Curtis and I, we're mounting up. We are going to talk to Jerry DePoto and the Mariners right now because, honestly, the deadline is tonight at midnight, right? Yeah. 11:59 before the work stoppage. And the reason why there is a work stoppage is because the CBA agreement between Major League Baseball and the Players Union is coming to an end. And how did that recent meeting go between the reps?
Like half an hour, yeah.
Yeah.
And,
so they were
could
that,
have been an email.
They were that positive.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you doing showing up for 30 minutes?
You can't even
face-to-face.
Make a bagel for yourself in those kinds of meetings.
I mean, what are you doing?
You're just showing up, probably sitting at a distance.
Yes.
Not many words exchanged. They just kind of look at each other and
they just stared at each other like this is a Clint Eastwood film from like the 60s.
Yeah, Tony Clark and Rob Manfred on opposite ends of the room.
Right.
Neither one of them saying much. And they're like, they check their watch. It's been 30 minutes. All right.
All right. Call it good.
We've done what we need to do.
Yeah. Big gulps, huh? Well, see you later. So now we have a work stoppage that's coming because they're going to need to be working on the labor agreement, and it's going to take some time. It's going to take a lot of time, and we don't know how long it will end up taking. Is there going to be a lockout? There's all these questions that loom. And so with all of that up in the air, you've started to see this free agent market really, really just become red hot. And we were told by all baseball experts, by the way, even general managers themselves, including Jerry DePoto here in Seattle, that, hey, business was going to operate as usual, that there wasn't going to be, you know, a crazy push here before the deadline that, you know, foresaw a lot of people waiting it out to see what ends up happening. But you see a ton of big names being signed just before this deadline, wrapping things up. And Curtis, even though they signed Robbie Ray, they need to go and get one more big signing. They need to go out and get an impact bat before this stoppage. It's not a want. It's a need.
And luckily, even after this wave of free agency has come and gone over the last 48 hours or so, there are still some impact bats available. The two biggest well, the two biggest in terms of realistic bats for the Mariners, because Carlos Correa, as we know, not in the Mariners' plans as of right now, and I don't think he'll ever be in the Mariners' plans, which, look, we know how I feel about that. It's unfortunate that they kind of locked themselves into this J.P. Crawford at shortstop thing for the foreseeable future when you've got more talented guys available there.
Yes.
Now, I'm not knocking J.P. Crawford at all. It's just stating facts. But the realistic options for the Mariners in terms of star-level bats are Chris Bryant and Trevor Story. Those are the two guys available in free agency right now that the Mariners have a shot on. And John Morosi, friend of the station, you can hear him all the time with Wyman and Bob. He, this morning on MLB Network, said that it looks like it's the Mariners and Blue Jays right now gunning for Chris Bryant's services. Which, look, if you're in the top two, you better not be number two. And hopefully the Mariners are the clubhouse leaders for Chris Bryant, which is kind of weird to think, because I remember having conversations at the end of last season going into this offseason when Chris Bryant's name gets brought up. It was everybody was like, ah, well, I mean, that's a pipe dream. I don't really see him having much interest in coming to Seattle.
Yeah.
Especially after playing for a 107-win San Francisco Giants team. Now, it looks like the Giants didn't have much interest in bringing Bryant back, especially at a number that Bryant's camp is probably looking for here. I believe he's a Scott Boras client, so he's going to be shooting for the moon here.
Yes.
But I look at Trevor Story. He's coming off a down season with Colorado. Maybe that drives his price tag down a little bit, and maybe there's something there that the Mariners could play with. And I think Trevor Story could probably have a longer window of success than Chris Bryant could, because Bryant has not really been able to get back to the level that he was at the start of his career when he was an MVP.
It's true, and so it all makes it very intriguing and interesting. Now, there are other names out there like Chris Taylor and Michael Conforto and Seiya Suzuki. There's, you know, possible trade opportunities with Matt Chapman, and, you know, Jose Ramirez it feels like a long shot opportunity, and you would have to give up a whole lot for him. But you could look at that. The A's, you know, a whole group of A's pitchers. Chris Bassett would be amazing.
Frankie Montas.
Right. But I look at an impact bat, and Curtis, the reason why I say it's a need and not a want to make it happen in literally today before the lockout ends up happening is because you have no idea what the CBA is going to end up, what the players union is going to agree to with the league. And there's rumors to be that, hey, the payroll is going to increase, that there is going to be a floor cap on everybody's payroll in Major League Baseball, that if you try to tank and lower your payroll, that you are going to be punished. You are going to pay a fine for that. So you're incentivizing everybody in Major League Baseball to have to spend over $1 million or $100 million of their payroll. That's the number that everyone's been looking at. So now if everybody is having to pay money, big money, that is going to inflate your market like crazy.
Absolutely.
Right?
And guys are going to be making way more than they had initially were going to.
Yes.
Under the old CBA.
Right. So you could definitely see why some of these players, like maybe Carlos Correa, is looking at and saying, hey, I can be patient. If I don't get my mega deal now, I know Corey Seager got his, but if I don't get mine now, mine might actually be bigger when it's all said and done after these CBA talks. So I think that you might end up having more competition than you currently do right now for guys like Chris Bryant and Trevor Story and teams willing to throw stupid money at this situation because they have to.
Now we look at what the Mariners need to do the rest of the offseason here, and that's continue to add to the offense. Now, we talk about free agency with Bryant and Story, but maybe there's a way you can ensure one of those guys coming to your team by trading for another superstar bat, where you've got guys like Matt Chapman and Jose Ramirez who are available out there. You know, they play third base, which would definitely take away some positional flexibility for you, because Chapman, I think, has only ever played third base in Major League Baseball.
Right.
And Jose Ramirez, he mostly plays third base. He can play some second. He can also play some left field. So he's got, I think, the most versatility of anybody out there, and he's the best player of all the names available that have ever been linked to the Mariners this offseason, but he's also going to cost the most. He's going to cost you, I think, at least Noel V. Marte, probably another top 10 prospect of yours, like a George Kirby or an Emerson Hancock.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe the Mariners don't necessarily press that button quite yet. Maybe they wait and see at the trade deadline if there's, you know, a much smaller asking price that Cleveland's looking for. But if they make a trade in hopes of that attracting a free agent, do you think that's a route that they should go, or should they not look to give up anything right now in hopes of getting one of these big names?
Well, I honestly would say, look, going after one of these big names in free agency is the best route to go. It's not my money, so I don't really care about spending the money here for the
sure.
Mariners. Okay, so I could care less about that. So, yeah, I want them to spend in free agency. But the other side of it, though, too, is I would rather have them keep the assets, not so that you're holding on to them and never going to use them in terms of a trade, but I would rather those pieces be used at the trade deadline when you know exactly what this team is, what it needs to improve as you're, you know, making this push towards the playoffs. Hopefully, you know, that is the expectation for this team heading into this next year. I think that that is a better use of your trade and your resources rather than having to go and do that now when all along you could have just paid somebody, right? I don't care what the number is. I don't necessarily care about the year when you're talking about somebody like Chris Bryant and Trevor Story either. I don't think they're going to get crazy years out of this deal that they're, you know, trying to negotiate. But average per salary, I don't really care. I think it's a better use of resources to use money in this situation than to use your farm system assets at this point to try and address one of those needs.
Agreed. And if there is a prospect of yours that you have high hopes for and he doesn't pan out, you still, you know, you have talent around that makes it so that what you were relying on with that guy doesn't necessarily tank your season. Whereas last year when Kelnick was brought up and wasn't playing very well at all, same with Cal Raleigh, that kind of held the Mariners back from what they could become. Now, you know, hopefully they add a bat here to where you're not relying solely upon, you know, a 21-year-old, 22-year-old kid coming up and saving your season that way.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. And so obviously we're going to keep refreshing our timelines.
Oh,
we're going to keep refreshing to see if there's any big news like we got from Robbie Ray yesterday. Man, that was exciting and fun. Hopefully the Mariners are able to pull something off like that. And we'll continue this conversation, by the way, with Ryan Divish, who is going to be coming up at noon. So really looking forward to getting his take, his opinion on what they have done thus far and what they could do by the end of today. All right, coming up next, we're going to get into a segment that we always do after reviewing a game. That's what caught our eye. Coming up next.